Hey there, Freedom Fighters. I'm so excited to do this interview. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. And I'm looking for little spots of hope. I don't think we're in a place where we can say, here's the way to build a successful company in the new economy today. We don't know. We don't even know what the new economy is. What I'm looking instead is in a world where we're just drowning in negative information, to find the spots of hope that give us an idea of what's possible, that maybe even remind us, yeah, things really are still possible. And I have been interviewing entrepreneurs who've done this. I've also respected a lot the entrepreneurs who've said, I'm not yet ready, even though we're doing well now, better even now than we were before the economy took a hit. I'm not yet ready to talk about it. And I get it. And once they say I'm not yet ready, I don't let them change their mind because I don't want to ever feel like something I said convinced them to do an interview. But today's guest said yes before I had a chance to tell him you can back out of it. And I'm so glad. One of my little passions is when I'm done with the day, before going to sleep, I will watch a video about someone who's doing something interesting with cameras. I got started with action cameras like the DJI Action and so on. You guys have heard me talk about this. And the interesting thing is once you get interested in it, you want to see what's the camera that they shot their video in? What's the equipment that they shot their stuff on? How can I do it? Even if I'm going to sleep imagining that I could do it, what is it? And they often will have these links in the bio of their, or in the description of their videos. And it's usually something like, if you want to buy it, here it is, US link, and then there's an Amazon shortened link, and then international link, and it's like some kind of genius link. And I never understood why, but I noticed that the top creators who are creating things with either about gadgets or creating things using cameras use this freaking genius link. And as I tweeted out, hey, is anyone doing well, better maybe even now than they were last year and willing to talk about it? This guy, Jesse Lake, said, I am. I said, would you be willing to come on? And so he said, sure. And then I saw it. He runs the company that makes all those links. And now I get to understand how that works, how he built it up and got all these creators. And also, since we're staying on topic here, why he thinks he's doing better now than last year. What's going on that's allowing him to grow so that we can have some hope? All right, this interview where I've yapped too much, where we talked to Jesse Lakes, the founder of Genius Link, is sponsored by two phenomenal sponsors. The first, if you're building anything and need a developer, go check out toptal.com/Mixergy. And the second, if you're building a website, you got to go to hostgator.com/Mixergy. But now, Jesse, thanks for being here.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You know, the thing that I always wondered is, why do they have two links? What you do, I imagine, is if there's an international link that links to a Genius Link, you figure out where in the world they are. And well, why are they even using you in the first place? And then why aren't they using you internationally?
Yeah. So the first reason they use us is, as you described, these creators are recommending a product to their audience. Their audience is, most cases, international. YouTube makes it really easy to watch videos anywhere in the world. And there's an amazing audience, you know, in every corner of the world watching these exact same videos. And part of kind of that, revenue model that the creators follow is really around the affiliate model as well. So when a creator recommends a product, being able to have a link for that product and having that worldwide audience click on that link and be able to buy it is important to them. Unfortunately, Amazon's ecosystem, Amazon is obviously a global name, but they have a very fragmented ecosystem. There's a lot of different Amazon stores all around the world. Each of those stores has its own affiliate program responsible for helping you earn commissions when you make a recommendation into that store. So once again, you have this this awesome creator that's putting together this awesome video about, you know, an awesome camera. But they want to make sure that person in Japan that's watching the video is able to buy that same camera in an Amazon store that's built specifically for them. So is selling to them in yen, is describing the product in Japanese, is going to have short and efficient shipping times, etc. So our job is to make sure that recommendation very quickly and efficiently goes to being to a place where that interested consumer can purchase, they can actually buy. So yeah, that's the longer answer on why people are using Genius Link is really to kind of
that makes sense. And you can tell where they are, and then you can tell where the consumer is, and then redirect them to the right version of Amazon. And I've been using Amazon as an example because it's the place that I happen to see most often. You work with other platforms, including.
Yeah, so we really kind of start off with iTunes when it was iTunes. Now, obviously, it's Apple Music and other various media types. That was really kind of where we learned about the problem and dove in. Amazon, obviously being the everything store, was kind of next. We've built out some cool stuff for Microsoft, and more recently we started working with a handful of other additional retailers. You know, back to the camera analogy, B&H Photo Video is one of the retailers we're doing some pretty cool stuff with. We've got some really cool stuff up our sleeve. Hopefully in the next few weeks that will help our client base and help consumers around the world be take a little bit more advantage of the changing situation.
Why do you think you're doing better this year than last year and having a better March than you expected, considering what's going on in the world economy?
For better or worse, we got dealt a really interesting hand. And then the other side of it is that we've been busting our buns the last couple of years to kind of get to this point. From what the impact we've had, the team has done an amazing job. We've been doing tons of different experiments with pricing and finally kind of found a sweet spot. So it's been 2 years of adjusting our price every 6 months
or
so.
But none of that changed from February to March, and March is clearly on an uptick. There's something, you're analyzing the market, and before we got started, you told me what you're seeing is changing in the world. What are you seeing that's leading to this?
Yeah. It seems that more and more people are working from home. And when they're working from home and they're kind of looking at this greater world at the moment, there seems to be a greater uptick of people working on a side hustle. Maybe it's creators creating videos or sharing products they love or curating products that are going to help other people out for certain situations. So it seems that more and more people are interested in affiliate marketing at the moment. And again, Amazon being this great ecosystem, easy to use affiliate program, but very fragmented, it seems to be leading directly to us. The flip side of that too is that e-commerce seems to also be having its darling moment as well, where more and more people are shopping from their couch because they want to play it safe and follow the guidelines that the various health organizations are helping out. So e-commerce in particular seems to be more and more people clicking on affiliate links for recommendations to get to the store to buy it, et cetera, which just kind of creates this amazing feedback loop for our clients.
So you're actually putting together a lot of what I've been learning in the interviews that I've done recently. One is e-commerce in general is doing well, and I've seen that across the board with people who I've interviewed in e-commerce. The second thing is any tool for side hustle for people who are building on online some kind of business. I didn't realize people were doing this yet. I didn't realize that they were mentally healthy enough to start thinking about their future. But even if it's not everybody, there's a small pocket of people who are saying, I get it. It's depressing. I'm going to go to work and find something new or build on my side hustle. And then for consumers, the fact that they're at home and that they're online a lot is then leading them to, it seems, to click on more of those genius links that you have throughout. You told me before we got started that, and just for the record, he is nodding, people. We're watching. We're doing this on video Zoom. Are you living on Zoom right now?
We use a lot of Slack and then Uber conference. So, a lot of video, a ton of video, but Zoom is not my go-to platform. It's a great platform, don't get me wrong, but Uber Conference and Slack.
Why do you prefer Uber Conference?
We started using it a handful of years ago and just haven't had a good reason to move away from it. Seems fairly straightforward.
It's really good for phones. It feels like it prioritizes phones, right? You could give me a phone number if you and I were going to get on a call, and I wouldn't have to dial in access numbers and all that. But it doesn't prioritize like video from what I see, and it doesn't prioritize recording video. Am I right in your uses?
Yeah. They did a kind of a rejigger of it 3 or 4 months ago. And I like it less after they did that, but the video is now kind of more in your face. But yeah, you're absolutely right that video was not as readily and as prevalent as Zoom, where it's kind of the go-to feature.
The part that I've noticed when people give me when people use it with me is a clear phone number. I can just put it in my phone book almost because they seem to use it all the time consistently. And then it could auto record so they can go back and get a transcript and see what I've talked to them about and work with them. All right. I get it. You were telling me before we got started, you had a collection of sites at one point that led you to start Genius Link. What was the collection?
Yeah. So 2006, 2007-ish, ran a series of different websites that would take soundtracks from extreme sports films and list them out with the different songs with links to iTunes and Amazon. So the example is Warren Miller puts out a video every year. There's usually about 50 different songs there, and you can usually associate some awesome moment, some great footage, some good feeling from those skiing or snowboarding and resonate back to new music. So I was really kind of capitalizing on that to sell music via iTunes and Amazon's affiliate program.
And so I do this a lot with movies. My wife always wants to know why she can't find great music anymore. And I always do. And it's the most random thing. I'll see a movie. Mm-hmm. They'll have some interesting playlist. I'll go listen to it. And suddenly I'm addicted to Persian dance music, which literally is happening now because of a movie. And so you're one of the people who helped get people like me hooked on music. Would you create a different website for like, I'm looking at Warren Miller now on Wikipedia. He's an American ski and snowboarding filmmaker. Would you create a whole website just for him or for all ski and snowboarding?
So all ski had one site, all snowboarding had one site, and then spun up surfing as well. And that had its own site. So, and unfortunately the sites are no longer up. It used to be skimoviemusic.com and surfertunes.com, etc.
And it was all SEO, search engine optimization?
Yeah, it was. It was the only solution in kind of. Yeah, there was a lot of organic SEO definitely helped because you would list out the keywords and it was a very concise landing page with a description, etc. But for the most part, there was no other way for snowboarders and skiers to kind of feed that habit of finding new music and really kind of getting the stoke before the snow really fell and stuck.
You know, I was going to ask you what problem you came across that led you to Genius Links, even though it seems obvious it's worth getting on the record. But I would even take a step back and say, how did you even know to get into affiliate revenue from music links on a website? And my guess is it's that you worked at Apple for what, 3 years, 2 years?
Yeah. So actually Apple was kind of a little bit further down the path. When I was in college, started this site called Nifty Tricks, and Nifty Trick was supposed to be the complete guide to every trick in the book for extreme sports. And it was right during the dot-com crash. So when I first started out, I was looking at these CPMs of $70, $80 for ad buys and thinking that the whole site would just be based off of banner ads. And then everything fell apart. And the CPMs went to nothing. And me being some random college kid, the only advertising I could find was affiliate programs. So I started off actually hating affiliate marketing, but it was the only thing available to try to monetize this idea. And that really kind of evolved over the years. Did a blog about digital music, which got me introduced to the iTunes affiliate program, then ran these soundtrack websites. The soundtrack websites kind of introduced the concept of this geofragmentation. But during that time period, I was actually a bit of a endless summer searcher. I would go to Costa Rica during the winters and would be in Colorado during the summers as a whitewater rafting guide. But one year I met a girl in Colorado and didn't leave to Costa Rica that year, and instead snowboarded a ton and wrote a book about iTunes affiliate program. And that book actually is what got me the job at iTunes. After they threatened to sue me, of course, they actually read the book and offered me a job.
But threatened to sue you? Why? Because they're Apple.
I'd put blood, sweat, and tears into writing this book. It was kind of this complete brain dump on the iTunes affiliate program. iTunes had this amazing affiliate program, but there was zero documentation. So it really took a lot of poking and prodding to figure out how it worked and how to kind of optimize it for those soundtrack sites. So took all those notes, wrote a book about it, just as about ready to publish. I found some people on LinkedIn, sent them a copy, got an email back saying, essentially a cease and desist, and that we should hop on the phone. So hopped on the phone with this woman. In the first 30 seconds were very civil and polite. In the next 45 minutes, she just kind of screamed at me, who the F are you? These are all lies. How could you possibly know more about the affiliate program than us? You can't publish this. You're going to make my life miserable. So forth. Turns out this woman is actually amazing. She became my boss shortly afterwards. I love working with her. But the gist was that, I was a complete nobody that had deep dove on this topic and become a subject matter expert out of just kind of experimentation, poking and prodding. But long
because
story
what,
short,
what were you able to do that wasn't clearly obvious about linking to iTunes music?
It was, and that's at that point that the URLs were pretty odd and broken apart. There was these multiple affiliate programs. It kind of went back to this geofragmentation issue. The tools, you would really kind of had to dig around and kind of stumble upon the tools. Once you got to the tool, they were pretty hard to use. There's no real programmatic way to use the tools.
Tool for doing what?
So again, with the soundtrack websites, we had hundreds of videos and with tens of songs per video. So we had lots and lots of links that needed to be created, and doing that manually just was not feasible. So we were building a tool that would help us take whatever song, whatever artist off of whatever album, find the iTunes link, turn into an affiliate link, and then be able to put that on the website. So
okay.
Really basic things. With thankful to work with my co-founder now on that project. It wasn't a hard one, but it was something that saved me a lot of time, was necessary to figure out.
Hey, look, I know that you've said on your LinkedIn profile, these sites are down, but take a walk down memory lane. Look at that. That's high school you, right?
That's exactly. That's the limit. That's the extent of my, my graphic design skills.
Does that bring it back? Do you remember those days nights that you'd sit and do it? You do.
Oh yeah. It was awesome. I was living the dream. Bouncing around, in the summer, snowboarding here and there. It was, my 20s were pretty amazing.
Were you always entrepreneurial?
Yeah, fairly. My mom was entrepreneurial. I think that kind of rubbed off on me. So kind of the first web venture, I took some of my money from a high school graduation and bought a domain name and some hosting space and started to do web design. And that kind of led to the Nifty Tricks thing, which really didn't quite pan out, but taught me a ton about affiliate marketing and just content sites. And it's evolved piece by piece. Genius Link is definitely by far the furthest I've gone, but there's probably been 10 different blogs or sites that I've tried to monetize and that have kind of really helped build momentum between there and here.
What is the earliest ones that made you feel almost like Alex P. Keaton from the old Family Ties TV show?
The earliest one was cyberfixation.com, which is
it was always websites.
Websites that sometimes tied into stuff. Kind of dabbled in real estate a little bit with some friends. So tried to recreate various aspects of the MLS, which was a massive waste of time.
How many people have tried? It looks exactly. Like it makes no sense. Okay, so you're starting to give me a little bit of cyberfixation.com. What year was this?
Oh, I got that domain in 99, and there was maybe a site sitting on it from 2002 to 2008-ish. I'm assuming it's dead as again. I think all the domains are just pointing to the whatever host I'm using these days.
Tri-local specialized in high-end. Oh, got it. That was your hosting company. I like to walk down memory lane with my guests. No, if you say something, this is what makes me, if I'm in a conversation with someone, I have to put my phone away because whatever they say, I have to go and research either for fact-checking, mm-hmm. which I do all the time with guests. Earlier today I was interviewing somebody who had an e-commerce plugin in India. I told you. Uh-huh. And I said, I don't know him. I don't know anyone like him. I go, I know who, Adi Painar. He is the WooCommerce creator. Yes, he's in South Africa. He and his family at 10 o'clock at night. They don't need me texting them. I texted him. He was totally generous. We talked a little bit. We talked about our family and our kids. And then I said, I got to run. So I do it as much as possible. And still, it plagues me. I still worry so much. Will somebody be getting away with something that they, like, are they going to use me to do something bad? Anyway, look. Walk down memory lane.
Yeah, I love archive.org. The Wayback Machine. I use that a ton. Yep. They are one of the
best resources that we have on the internet today. I will even say Absolutely. That they have made a bunch of books somehow for free for kids through duration of school being closed. My kids, I've been talking too much about this. They love Mo Willems, the author. Uh-huh. I can't get the book. They have it available on their platform. A lot of his books. I don't know how. Anyway, so you were saying that you were, what was cyberfixation.com? This was one of your earlier projects.
This was kind of the first, parent company of my web design. And at the end of high school, right into college, thinking, that I'm so smart because I can build web pages. This is what GeoCities was still around. Those web pages were even uglier than what you just showed.
But, not bad. How much money did you have when you graduated college?
Well, I graduated college, handful of shares of stock of Apple and maybe $1,000 in my bank account.
Why? That's a lot. You know what? I saved up to, I remember at the end of high school, $17,000. I think by the end of college, actually, I should say zero because I had a few thousand dollars, but because of all the debt and I had to pay for school myself, me and my parents. But towards the end, it became me, even though they started out saying, we don't need any financial aid. And then I go, well, we can't even handle that. And then it was me and then it was my credit cards. So, but until then, I had a lot. What was it? Why didn't you have all that money that you earned as you were building these businesses? Oh,
I like to play more than I like to work or did for a while. So I'd make some money and then go and have an adventure, make some money, go have an adventure. I lived below the poverty line until I got my job at Apple. And I was happy as a clam. And I was just seasonal work as a whitewater raft guy. That's just what you did. You work, 5, 6, 7 days a week for a handful of months, you make sure there's a smile on your face and make sure that you're your rafting customers have a good time. But at the end of it, you know, you take that money and you go travel, or you make it stretch as far as you can. So it's a very, you know, boom and bust cyclical period. It was not about creating long-term wealth, creating
long-term memories. That. I want to come back and ask you about Apple and what it was like to work there, and then the creation of Genius Link. But first, my first sponsor is a company called HostGator. Let me ask you this. As someone who's prolific, who's created companies, you know your customers are all people who are creating content and creating companies. Do you have an idea for what, if somebody is now in this economy saying, I'm going to use HostGator, create a website, launch a business, do you have an idea for what they could do or how they could think about coming up with a project to launch?
Yeah. So of course, you know, you see everything through a lens, but we see this great opportunity for finding some specific niche that interests you and creating review sites, niche authority sites. So, you know, that's a cool water bottle you just had a moment ago, right?
Oh, yeah.
What makes that water bottle better than these other ones? You know, tell me in 300 words, a couple images and a few links, and then repeat that process a handful of times. Get that onto a WordPress-based theme or WordPress-based site with an easy to use theme. WooCommerce is another great theme for exactly that. And you know very quickly have the foundation of an affiliate business. And then it's obviously some SEO work, et cetera, to optimize it. But it's not hard to get started with a site. And yeah, a good hosting company can take a lot of that pain away for you.
You know what? Those niche obsessions. You're absolutely right. My friend Chase Reeves created a niche obsession. Do you know him?
No. But I love the story so far.
So freaking funny. He can crack you up just talking about the weather, but he's obsessed with backpacks. And I had no idea that people cared this much about backpacks. He will do videos that last an hour on just reviewing 5, maybe 7 backpacks. And it's compelling because he cares about the details of the zipper. He cares about what you put in which section. And there's a huge audience for it. There's a big following. Absolutely. Right. This water bottle, it's funny that you mentioned it. You're the first person to ever recognize this. This water bottle it's a hot tea bottle, which is what I drink all day, tea and coffee. I had to stop a guy on the train because I immediately knew this is the one for me after searching for months. The other ones that I had would leak. This one has this lock over here. You still can't, even when you unlock it, you can't drink unless you press the button and the cap. Anyway, so you're saying this type of obsession, there are maniacs like me who need that kind of research.
Exactly.
We will read endlessly, even after we buy our water bottle, about other water bottles, dreaming about the time we buy the next water bottle. And all of that feeds into an affiliate potential revenue. And that's what you're suggesting. Whatever your obsession is, take it. What are you drinking? What type of water bottle?
I was just going to say, my Nalgene bottle from a decade ago. Exactly. I need to level up. So it's not just the people that are super obsessed, but there's a wider range. Of course, what is it? The concentric circles, right? You focus on that main target, that beachhead, and build the content for them, but you'll find markets.
Beyond and beyond and beyond.
Exactly.
That makes sense. You know what? When I see people with that water bottle that you have, I just want to say, don't you know there's so much better out there? Whatever your obsession is, thank you. That was such a great response to my question. Whatever your obsession is, bring it to HostGator right now. And if you use my link, you're going to get the lowest price they have available. They give you a list of things like unlimited email addresses, unmetered this, unmetered that. They give you a bunch of ad credits. I'm not going through the list of features. I just want you to know, if you go create there, you'll get dependable service, all the features you need to get you started at a price that's incredibly reasonable. HostGator.com/Mixergy. That URL is what gets you all those extra perks and the lower price. HostGator.com/Mixergy. So what was it like to work at Apple? This is like a dream job for someone who's addicted to their products like I am.
Exactly. Oh, I drank the Apple Kool-Aid at a very early age. It was amazing. It was a dream come true. It was what got me out of, again, kind of having this amazing, although always broke lifestyle. And it was really fun to kind of ditch the rivers for a cubicle commute and live in Cupertino. But it was the people at Apple. I guess there's two different sides to it, right? My girlfriend at the time followed me out there. We were living in Colorado. She came out there, and she got a job at Apple as well. She's an engineer. She worked on pricing availability. It had kind of the exact opposite experience of mine. My experience, again, this woman Yvonne, we started off a little rough, but from there on, it was just a great relationship. We really worked very well together. It was amazing.
Do you have an example? Yeah. Like, I remember I just talked to my friend Noah Kagan. I asked him, what was it like to work for Facebook? He said they were all about being smart about everything. And he'd say, how about if we do this and no one's going to know the difference? And they said, no, you have to sweat and think about it like a genius at every level. And it made him think about the details of everything. Do you have an example of what it was like for you?
Yeah. So I worked on the affiliate program, obviously. And the affiliate program is a marketing program. I was under the iTunes org, Eddie Q's org. But, Marcom is the greater marketing communications entity that oversees Apple's visual image. And it was going over to their office and kind of seeing that aspect was really interesting. But one of the first things, you go through the door and it's kind of a nondescript building or whatever. And it was, I'm going to space that. It's like simple, simple, simple. And the first two simples are crossed out. And just that basic idea of that simplicity, right? And Apple's, you know, famous.
They literally had that on the wall.
Big, huge,
simple, cross out the first two simples. And now we've got the essence of what we're going for. One
exactly.
Word,
simple. And I thought that was just really kind of hit the nail on the head of it makes sense. So some may call me a snob, but I now can, you know, look at things and it probably is not a great skill, but you know, this doesn't work or this works. I like it or I don't like it. And it, you know, because we work with a good designer, it makes it a lot easier for me, but I've definitely, I can't design better myself, but I appreciate things that look good, that
well,
are
what about
clean,
this,
et cetera.
Jesse, you own kit.com, which I hope we'll have time to talk about here. And if not, I'd love for you to be a guest again on the site. Isn't this too simple? What's going on kit.com? Oh, you just gave a sigh. What happened?
Yeah. When we, there's a story.
All that's on here is just a box with a barcode and a K logo on it.
Kit.com. And I'll tell you a sad story. So kit.com was created by this woman that I worked with when I first started working with Apple.
Oh, you have
kit.co. We had kit.com. Well, they had kit.com.
Okay.
When they started it, they got a series of investors. The lead investor bought the domain, and the agreement was that, you know, after another round, the domain would go with them. They got the first round. They couldn't get the second round. Things didn't quite work out for the original team. They built it, obviously, a great site and a great community. But at the end of it, it just didn't happen. So they got acqui-hired by Patreon, and Patreon was looking to do some merch. Patreon acquired the assets that they had, but that did not include the domain. So Patreon was going to implement Kit into the greater scheme of things. Unfortunately, that didn't quite work out. So at the end of it, the Kit community was essentially mothballed. And we saw that Kit was one of our clients. Obviously, I knew Camille quite well. And we thought this was too great of an opportunity to let go. So we jumped in, stretched ourselves incredibly thin to make it happen. But at the end of the day, we were able to acquire the assets from Patreon. Unfortunately, though, that domain was not part of the assets. So we were in conversations with the VC to get the domain. We thought we were in a good place. It turns out that VC, one of the LPs, happens to be the gentleman that was a co-founder of Uber. That was about the time that Uber IPO'd. It became quite challenging to kind of continue that conversation. And then mid-November, we thought we were kind of in the right place to slowly move that forward. We got a note from the general counsel from the VC saying, you know what, we actually want that domain for one of our other companies. Can you guys move off of it? So starting on Thanksgiving week, we started a massive migration to move from kit.com to kit.co. So there was something like over 900,000 backlinks to kit.com and about 10 to kit.co. And it's,
And for something like this, the backlinks are important. What kit.co is, for people who don't know, it's a place for creators to put all of their equipment, their kit in one place. And I think tell me if I'm wrong, they could even create multiple kits, right? Mm-hmm. So it could be, here's my Apple desktop kit. Mm-hmm. Here is my on the go for traveling kit of my computer equipment. And here's my photography kit. And they link to all of them. And then there's affiliate relationships with all those. And I think the creators get the revenue from that.
Exactly. Yeah. You nailed it. And then we like to see, of course, you know, for, you know, runners to have their running kit and for, you know, tea drinkers to have their tea drinking kit.
Right. I did see cyclists use it too. Mm-hmm. That's a big thing. I'm into cycling videos too sometimes. Who's the VC?
Expa is the VC.
Oh, okay. All right.
New York based.
Okay. I didn't realize that. Okay, so that's why that site is so simple. It's not that you've oversimplified it to the point where I can't understand what it is. It's just that
it's not ours anymore.
It's just not ours and it's nobody's right now.
Yeah.
Okay, so then where did the idea for Genius Link come from? How did it originate?
Sure. So taking rewind a bit, you know, we had these soundtrack websites, and these soundtrack websites were awesome, a ton of fun. You know, it was great to watch videos. And, you know, this was kind of early days of Shazam, but had this nice hockey stick growth and traffic over a few years. People really appreciated having these soundtracks. But unfortunately, my revenue was growing really slowly. It was very, very linear. And kind of the aha moment came when I realized that my site's traffic had really evolved. And it was a lot of it was now international. So after the aha moment was the oh no moment when I realized all that international traffic I was essentially sending to a broken link, iTunes, Amazon, et cetera, with digital products. There's digital rights licensing. And iTunes only had the permission to sell to people in the US from iTunes US store. Amazon.com only had the permission to sell to the US. So if someone's coming from Germany, they couldn't buy from that link that I provided them. So the thought was, okay, well, I need to solve this. I need to make sure that that German skier snowboarder can buy the song that they're excited to buy. And that kind of led to the whole basic development. It was originally called GeoRiot, the idea that a single link could work across multiple storefronts, across multiple affiliate programs, and really just help solve that last mile problem of recommendations. And that, yeah, started a 10-year journey.
Why'd you change your name?
You like GeoRiot more than GeniusLink?
Truthfully, it doesn't matter. They're both good. GeoRiot kind of makes sense. GeniusLink makes sense.
Yeah, GeoRiot, we were super focused on the iTunes ecosystem, iTunes and App Store ecosystem. And that worked really well. But we wanted to expand. You know, Amazon obviously has a massive product catalog. It is kind of the de facto e-commerce player, at least here in the US, et cetera. So we had this opportunity to buy the geni.us domain. So we went with it. One of our largest competitors at the time was a company called Smart URL. The thought was, well, what's smarter than smart? Well, a genius is. So we grabbed that domain.
That's great.
You know, we call it intelligent links versus, you know, kind of a static link, which is what Bitly would be considered. But the dynamic link, the intelligent link, and genius just seemed to resonate a bit more. It wasn't, you know, so geopolitical, confrontational as a name, even though I love the name GeoRiot.
I wonder why Bitly never did this. I kind of assumed that they eventually would get into the space. Why do you think?
That's a great question. There's kind of two sides to short linking, right? Bitly was first mover. You know, they get, you know, huge respect for doing it. Mark Josephson, their current CEO, is an incredibly smart person, is doing really good things with the company. But Bitly hit something pretty solid early on. And they don't need to right now, I think, is why they haven't done it yet. That being said, it's bits and pieces of what we do are not hard. There's a ton of different intelligent link tools out there. Not many of them will do the smarts to kind of translate the Amazon links. That's kind of our special sauce. But Bitly seems to be doing incredibly well, taking large brands, charging them a very high price to create a short link. And that's good for them.
Amazon too, right?
They do. AMZ and .to short URL is run and managed by Bitly.
Yeah. You're saying, so it's basically not their model and it's not as easy as it seems to parse the data and send people over to the right store.
Yeah. So we have two sides to our business, right? We have the intelligent link management side, which is really our push to be a better Bitly, but more focused on e-commerce. And then we have the link translation, the product matching piece, which is really kind of, we've got a couple patents here. This is really kind of the problem I really enjoy is just you give me one link that has unique identifier. I take that unique identifier. I figure out what that product is. That product is defined by its attributes, the metadata that describes it. Using that metadata, then we can go and find the same product in a foreign storefront of the same brand or even a different storefront. So you can, you know, if you have a link from Germany, we want to send them to Amazon.de, we can do that. Or if you have Amazon.com product link and B&H sells the same thing, we can transition to them as well and sell it there. So that I love that problem. That problem, it gets me really excited. And it's a fun one to solve at scale.
All right, I'm going to come back and ask you what the first version looked like and how you got your early customers. Oh, I love that response.
You pulled it up.
I should say that my interview is also sponsored by TopTal. Listen to how Jesse's talking about that's a fun problem to solve. That's the thing that you go to TopTal for. Engineers who love to solve problems. If you're looking for somebody who's going to take your direction and go do exactly what you're saying, there are other places to go. If you're looking for someone who'll take your problem and say, oh, I can't stop thinking about it, I need to solve it, that's the place to go. I talked to Noah Kagan, as I mentioned earlier. He's the founder of several companies, including Sumo. And I asked him, why are you using TopTal? You're pretty cheap. And he said, first of all, I'm not cheap. It's frugal. It's I use a bunch of different synonyms, but I get it. He's saying he wants to think intelligently about his spending, which is why he doesn't spend too much. But I said, okay, TopTal, I've heard people say it's more expensive than other freelancing sites. He says, no, they get really top developers. And he said, it's like Amazon Web Services for developers. You need some, you go spin them up and you get the best of the best developers who jump in and they actually can pick things up fast. But then once the project is over or you need to ramp down because things are a little bit shaky, you just go back and you say, sorry, TopTal, we can't work with these developers. We're going to scale back. And it's up and down as you need them without committing, he said, to long-term relationship. I like that Jesse's nodding throughout all this. This tells me I'm on the right track with this. And the other thing he says is, look at when I hire developers, look at all the things I have to pay. And he gave a list of things like unemployment insurance and all those things that are great for the people who work with him full time, but it's really hard when you want what he wants, which is a developer who's going to work at night when he's here in the US during the day, someone in a different time zone who's going to continue to work and is not an American citizen who does not need all that just to work a few hours a day on Noah Kagan's problems. I was going to call him Jesse. I'm going to call everyone Jesse Lakes now.
I've got problems too that always need help.
Yeah, good. Then here's what you do. Don't just go to TopTal. Go to the special URL where they're going to give you 80 hours of developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours in addition to a no-risk trial period. It's toptal.com/mixergy. Top is on top of your head. Tal is in talent. toptal.com/mixergy. toptal.com/mixergy. You know what I noticed? I never look at my stats. I had to look at my stats for something. And Apple now tells you when people drop off and, you know, or when they fast forward through stuff. And obviously people fast forward through my ads. My ads don't get nearly the fast forward of my friends' ads. And I ask people, why? What do you think it is? And they said, you're asking the guests to basically talk about what they would do with this thing. And occasionally you're on a roll and sometimes it kind of sucks and people should fast forward. But, I'm glad to hear it.
Support the podcasting industry. It's awesome to see, yeah, people not fast forwarding, actually working with those advertisers and those sponsors to move the industry forward.
And remembering to use the URL at the end, because at least the nice thing about a YouTube video, you just click the link. You don't have to remember this, that slash, right? It's wonderful that podcast listeners are willing to say not just HostGator, but HostGator.com/Mixergy, TopTal.com/Mixergy. You know, all right, what did the first version look like?
First version was ugly. I believe it was brown and white, maybe it was orange and white, and had a, was it like this is probably horrible, the white power fist or the Black Panther fist or something?
I think you had that for a bit, didn't you? Where was that? I don't know how I saw it, but I've seen it several times. What could it do when it was called Geo Riot?
Geo Riot was really focused on iTunes ecosystem. So music and apps. This is, again, we first started solving this problem in 2008, 2009, and it was really kind of the explosion of the App Store. A lot of people would put out two versions of their app, the freemium version and the paid version, and they would use a affiliate link to go from the free to the paid. So we worked with a ton of different app developers, mobile ad networks.
Oh, within the app itself.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that we saw a ton of that. We also worked with a number of record labels, et cetera. So it was really, iTunes was kind of the de facto music buying experience for quite some time. You know, Spotify has done an incredibly good job at creating some competition there. But yeah, we were fortunate enough to be, you know, one of very few solutions for music, for books, for apps had a worldwide audience.
You were looking at their IP address of the user, and then based on that saying, here's the store they need to go to. That means that the creator, the affiliate, had to have an affiliate account on all those different platforms, right? And you would link them out so they could do that. Mm-hmm. And then the parsing, you already wrote the book on this and you worked at Apple at the time. So you had an understanding of how to parse. So this was fairly straightforward. Am I right? Or I don't want to minimize it. Yeah, I saw you wince. Yeah, tell me what's behind the wince.
So there's geotarget, there's translate, and there's encode are kind of the three steps, right? So geotargeting is basic. It's, you know, take the IP, resolve it against a database that tells you what country you're in. Everyone can and should do that. The second part, the translate, is really, again, where the secret sauce is. So taking that unique identifier out of the link, that part's easy. Taking that unique identifier, getting the metadata, that part's not too hard. But then taking that metadata and finding the same product in that foreign storefront, that's where there's some work. And we have kind of this five-step process and have refined that, and different media types have slightly different configurations of those, et cetera. But, you know, when is it important that Deluxe and the name sticks, or when is it not important, or when the ID changes, how do you manage that? When do you go to search? When do you not go to search? There's a lot of little nuances in that have really been tested and optimized to make sure it works as well as possible. But once you kind of get through that.
Even with the first version, you had all that.
The basic framework, it's evolved a fair amount over the years. We are constantly kind of tweaking and configuring. Bundles have become a big thing, right? So, you may have a link for a camera, and we may find that camera is available just as the camera, or also as a camera with lens and memory card, etc. We want to try to send you to the camera. We want the parity, right, between camera and camera, where the bundle actually may be cheaper, or maybe the first thing it pulls up. So, just kind of having some logic around that to make sure that the user experience is as clean as possible, but also that we're making the right choice for the consumer in the long run.
You launched 2009. Am I right about that?
Yeah, exactly. We threw out a free product 2009, and then I stepped away from it when I went to Apple. And my co-founder, the other Jesse, pushed ahead. Yeah, he was an engineer at Microsoft. Stayed in touch. I would kind of help in within an ethical realm, of course. Working at Apple, understanding the program, he was kind of solving the problem, but. 2009 is when the problem, we first kind of worked on it, but I started Apple late 2009, stepped away, and then came back 2012 full on.
What led you to come back full? Well, first of all, who's the other Jesse?
Jesse Pashnik. Jesse Pashnik was my best friend growing up, my roommate in college. He's the real brains of the operation. I have the ideas and he makes them reality. He puts things together. I scheme on stuff and convince him, try as hard as I can to convince him that it's a good idea.
Okay. So he kept working on it. There mm-hmm. wasn't much revenue in it, it seems like. And then at some point things turned. What led you to finally leave your job and go do this?
So Apple, again, was an amazing experience. Worked with some awesome people. I was really enjoying it. I was getting fat and lazy. It was, corporate life was good. It wasn't for me. As cliche as it sounds, an entrepreneur at heart. That hustle means a lot to me. It was awesome, getting Apple RSUs and getting, a solid paycheck. But at the end of the day, I saw that Apple, I was getting paid very well to make this problem that I'd started solving worse. We doubled the size of the affiliate program was there at the same time. Amazon was significantly increasing their global footprint as well. So just comparing the two, what's that?
What made it worse? How did you make it worse?
We rolled up more affiliate programs for more iTunes stores. So when I first started, there was 19 storefronts and 17 affiliate programs.
Oh, got it.
We rolled out stores and affiliate programs through Latin America, more countries in Europe, etc. And it just, it was more fragmented. It needed a cleaner solution. And that sounded way more interesting to me.
Why
at the
not then? Why didn't Apple do this for themselves? Single URL, go deal with it.
Why didn't Amazon do this for themselves? And I've asked mm-hmm. them specifically multiple times. And typically the answer I get for companies that large, if they're not solving a $1 billion problem, it's not worth putting their engineers on it. And that's kind of the traditional response. At the end of the day, us having a nimble team could move much quicker and solve a much more complex problem that's going to help net them X amount more revenue. Whatever that number may be, but they want their engineers working on the next App Store, the next Apple TV.
I guess they lose money by solving this anyway, because anyone who's not using a customized link, they're also sending customers to the wrong store. So they're losing sales because of this too. Got it. Okay. So you launched it. How did you get users? What did you guys do? Creators.
So at that time period, it was really, the early days, it was a lot of, app developers and musicians. And it was really just a lot of hustle, reaching out to people, explaining, showing that the problem exists and that they weren't monetizing it. Once you understand there's a problem, it was a really easy sale. So much of it was education of, hey, this is a iTunes US link. Look, you can see US in the URL. You're using the affiliate program from Linkshare. Go look, it has a US flag next to it. You realize that, based off of your Twitter stats or your website stats, you're getting 20% of your traffic from the UK. That doesn't work. Try slipping out, US for UK or GB, and people would see that error message and it would just click. And then it was a pretty easy sell from there. So really just getting someone to pay attention about what that bigger picture was, making sure that they were not only monetizing that international audience, but also finding a good user experience for that international audience.
But it was one-off emails. Did you have a you're a system-oriented person? You must have created some way to message multiple people at once, right?
We found that the custom one-off emails, you know, there was you would have a signature that would include the bulk of the email, but you would go through and customize it. We actually found our best conversions were when we actually film a video where we would go and click on someone's link from an international proxy, show that it aired out or show that it wouldn't resolve, and then move it forward and say, you know, here, let me show you how that would work with the Genius link, build it on the video. So these are like 2-3 minute videos that were one-offs. We would, you know, email those, as a series of 3 or 4 email drip. That was somewhat programmatic, but
so no, how many people? Oh, that was partially programmatic. How many people did you have that were doing that?
Just a couple. Myself and then this guy Taylor helped me out with a lot of that for a long time. But yeah, it's been we would grab an intern here or there and kind of, you know, give them this menial thing. But yeah, for the most part, I've sent a lot of emails in my day, and that's okay. It works. It doesn't work at scale, but that's, I think the conversion rates are higher because it's not at scale.
I feel like, and tell me if I'm wrong in this, that when I see that Lou from Unbox Therapy has very little in his, look at the smile on your face. He's great, right? Like for you guys, he's a big brand. Is he still a customer of yours?
I believe so. Yeah. We have thousands of clients these days. I don't pay attention as much as I should.
And sometimes the creators change things up. I notice, and as somebody who notices, I could see that he has 2 different links. I could see that one of them is a Genius link. And I might, if I was a creator in that world, I might go and see who Genius link is. Ah, that's why Lou's using him. Great. I think I'm going to use it. This feels like there's virality in it because people need to share that link, at least on YouTube. In other platforms, you can hide it as a blogger, for example, right?
Exactly. That is our biggest marketing push right now. And it's just, yeah, having a good domain.
To get influencers,
yeah, the creators, exactly.
Is there one that you're especially proud of that you're like a fan of and suddenly they're using you?
It's when I stumble across links in the wild, like you said, it's pretty amazing. I get pretty excited at various things. You know, some of the latest snowboard films that were released using our links, you know, that just kind of really brought it back full circle.
I heard you recently, where was it here? 2019, you called yourself a raft guide bum. Do you still consider yourself this?
I think I'm less of a bum. I haven't been on a raft in a bit, but I think at heart, I'm still a dirtbag and still an adrenaline junkie.
So then what did you do? What was the next platform? I'm imagining it was Amazon, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then why is Microsoft touted so much? What is Microsoft... What's their
Microsoft was convenient. Yeah, we're based in Seattle. My co-founder, the other Jesse, is from Microsoft. They were selling music as well. So it was a matter of convenience. Unfortunately, their affiliate program was kind of going through some transitions there. We spent a bunch of time building out this link translation piece, but it definitely did not grow to the same level that iTunes or Amazon did. And it's there. We have some pretty cool users using it, but it definitely did not hit scale and it definitely does not get the same attention that we've given some of these other larger ecosystems.
So what's the next thing? You're starting to tell me before we got started, big things are happening. I thought you weren't going to tell me on camera here. And you said, all right, I'm willing to talk about what's coming up. What is it?
Yeah. So we're finding, traditionally we've been kind of one link that works to get you as quickly as possible to be able to buy. And we're finding that that's not always the best choice. You as the creator don't know what the consumer wants. Taking a look back, Amazon is what, 38%, 39% US market share. And that's huge. You know, Walmart is, I think, 5% from that same eMarketer survey. But that also means that approximately what, 3 out of 5 clicks are not going to Amazon. 3 out of 5 sales dollars online are not going to Amazon. So Amazon's huge, but it's not everything. So what we're finding is that this whole concept of choice, giving consumers multiple buy options for that same product actually is leading to higher conversion rates. It's leading to more money.
Yeah. I think I saw this. I don't remember where, but in my research of you, I saw a book. And underneath the book cover were 3 different buttons. I noticed Amazon. I noticed the Barnes & Noble. I missed the other one. And I thought, oh, who is going to Barnes & Noble anymore? Why didn't you just take me to Amazon? Aren't you losing people when you give them another option?
So... No, all music marketing these days is kind of following that same piece, right? Where it's song or album art, and then, you know, multiple buy buttons or pass to consume. We noticed that books were also following this path as well. Again, Amazon is kind of the dominant force for selling books in the US.
Oh, but it was Apple. Yeah. And what else is going on out there?
Sorry, but now books is, yeah, Amazon's got that one pre-wrapped up. But we noticed that doing that same thing for products is also working out incredibly well. And we find that, especially for, you know, camera gear, again, if you're going to drop $1,000 for a tripod, you're not going to blindly buy it on Amazon. You'll probably spend some time, again, going to B&H Photo Video or maybe Best Buy or Adorama or one of the other, you know, specialty retail stores, and maybe doing some price comparison, et cetera. So as a creator, if I can give you each of those different options to help you do your due diligence, your price comparison, essentially on the fly, not only am I helping you speed up that buying process, but I'm also allowing you to set an affiliate cookie for each of these other retailers, so that if you do decide to ultimately go to B&H later, or you know someone else, then that creator will still get credit for it. So helping you as a consumer and making sure that the creator is opening those affiliate links and channels by encouraging you as the consumer to do your due diligence, your price shopping.
And then there's also retargeting involved. How does that work?
Yeah, so retargeting, it can be brilliant when done correctly and not creepily. So we allow our links to include a retargeting pixel. Traditionally, retargeting is limited to where you can input your JavaScript, and where you can add your JavaScript is typically only your web page. But with our links, we allow you to put the JavaScript into a link. We actually pause the link for a fraction of a second to fire the JavaScript and do a meta redirect to send you on. So as a consumer, it seems like you're still getting from A to B as seamless as possible. It's actually kind of that stutter step, so we can put that JavaScript in there. That being said, things like CCPA and GDPR are making it slightly less effective across the board, but it's also, I strongly believe in you know, the online privacy stuff, and I'm a fan of what they're doing. It's just not as seamless of a piece as it was before. But the choice pages absolutely can do the retargeting pixels as well.
All right. What do you think you can do if there's a recession? How is Genius Link going to grow or survive in a recession?
Great question. I think we just get back to stick to our roots. Helping people make more money seems to be a recipe for being able to follow along. If your clients, your users are successful, then in theory, some portion of that value that you add, you'll be able to see as well. So again, kind of these choice pages and allowing consumers to be able to kind of price track across the board seems to be really catching on. And we're finding Amazon is not always the lowest price.
I noticed that on Wirecutter. I just assumed Wirecutter should just send everyone to Amazon unless they get a better cut somewhere else, and then fine, maybe. But they do show prices from like Best Buy versus Amazon, exactly. Walmart versus Amazon, and it's kind of surprising that sometimes they're not. The other weird thing, though, Jesse, for me is I still pick Amazon anyway, because for a few bucks, I'd much rather have the system I'm familiar with than the one where who knows what customer service is like. Mm-hmm. But God, I can't wait for Shopify to unify somehow. The Shopify online buying experience is beautiful. It keeps getting so good. Once you leave the Pixel world to the Atom world, though, they still struggle. And I love a united front somehow. You know, one store that gives me all little shop at one place. I know they tried it with an app, with an iPad app for a while there. I don't know where that went, but it didn't take off. But the idea that now all the Shopify stores with all their little mom and pop aesthetics and experiences could unite, and then I have one customer service or tracking link, just that's a dream.
Yeah. You have a preference. You have a strong preference towards Amazon. We buy a lot on Amazon, but we have a Target that is half a mile away, and it's way easier to buy on Target, drive for 2 minutes, park in the parking lot, hit the button on the app, they come deliver to you and head back. Yeah, it's Amazon Prime, same day delivery is great, but if you really need something right then and there, that Target experience is even faster. So we probably buy half our stuff on Target these days.
You know what? The coronavirus issues have gotten me to start to look at other options that I never would have considered, or that I considered and then for some reason just forgot about, like Rainbow Grocery. It is a fantastic grocery store here in San Francisco. It's all vegetarian, which our family's vegetarian. It has incredible food. It's a co-op, so it has like this nice co-op-y vibe. It's phenomenal. I pass it on my bike ride home. I never think to go inside it. Now we can't get from Whole Foods through Amazon. We're ordering from them and go, why did we not do this before? The food is phenomenal. I couldn't find paper towels at Amazon. I forgot to buy it before this happened. Why am I not considering these other places? You're right. Target has really improved itself. They will even tell you what's available to your local store if we're there. Anyway, might as well. Plus an activity for the kids. All right.
Yeah. Amazon does a lot of things right, but I don't think Amazon has fully ate everyone's lunch yet. I think there's a good fighting chance for the rest of the e-commerce world.
I think now we're starting to look, at least we as a family, mm-hmm. are starting to look a little bit beyond and see what else is out there and recognize, there's some things that we hadn't considered. You know, the other thing that we hadn't considered, every time we take a drive as a family, I will stop by for coffee, which slows everything down. And then
it's
we
important.
Go and pick food up, which also slows everything down. I told you that I got this passion for these bottles that keep drinks hot. When I ran my marathon in Antarctica, one of the little gifts that the company that kept me safe on Antarctica gave me was a water bottle that is almost as good as this. But boy, it will keep hot water, coffee so warm for so long. Then now before a trip, I go, I can't just walk into any old coffee shop and take out my rubber gloves and go through the whole issue. Great. I got an extra coffee the way that I like it. I put it in the thermos. Who needs to stop for stupid coffee? I'm not going to stop for stupid coffee, but I will pay extra if there's a service that helps me monetize my links better. And that's what Genius Link does. Congratulations. I've known you as a software company. I've seen you embedded in my life. For some reason, I just never thought that there was a person behind the company that I could get to know. And I'm so glad that this helped, that this me saying I'd like to talk to companies who are doing well right now helped me connect with you. Thanks so much for doing this interview.
That's absolutely my pleasure. Thank you for taking the time to chat.
And anyone out there who is running a company now that's doing a little bit better, has contact with someone who's doing a little bit better. If you're ready now to do an interview, please introduce yourself to me. I'm Andrew@mixergy.com. When you're ready, I will do it. I'm not looking to push anyone to do interviews. God knows we overbook the interview day. I had to take my shirt off and I'm now in the plain white t-shirt because I'm so hot from recording. But I will stay here till midnight and beyond and continue just to bring these stories that look at how electrified I am from your story, Jesse. We need this as entrepreneurs. A lot of it is, can we continue and still believe in ourselves in the face of lots of evidence that we should not believe in ourselves? And if we do believe in it, if we do continue, we find opportunities that wouldn't have existed if not for our ability to go look and find them.
So if I can add one thing to that, and I think this resonates with you as well, as a marathon runner, it's one step in front of the other. Things can suck. Your legs feel like lead. You know, it hurts, but you just put one foot in front of the other. You just keep moving. And that's when things suck, just one foot in front of the other, baby steps, right? Keep going, and you'll cross that finish line. But anyway, sorry.
No, that's absolutely true.
As a runner.
Because I've got my DJI camera with me and a GoPro last year, when I was in South Africa, I picked the wrong spot to go run. There was no shade. It was super hot and there was nothing to look at. And I have video of myself just to keep myself busy talking to the camera. And in one moment, I said to the camera, I can't do this anymore, but I'm not going to try to finish this 26.2 miles. I'm just going to try to get to that hill over there. And I pointed the camera at the hill. And of course, the GoPro can't like show the magnitude of the hill very well. But I remember just going to get to that hill. And then from that hill, I'm going to get to the next one. And you're absolutely right. We're now at a point where we're just one hill at a time here. All right. Thanks, Jesse. And I didn't even get to ask you about running, but I hope you'll be back on. It's geniuslink.com. It's also kit.co for the collection of tools, including people like Marques Brownlee has got his stuff on there. And Peter McKinnon and so many others who I follow are on there. And I thank the two sponsors, seriously, to two sponsors who made this interview happen. Thank you so much for sponsoring. It's hostgator.com/mixergy and toptal.com/mixergy. Bye, everyone.